be a lot of shouting in heaven. I don't know if you noticed this morning. I want to thank all of you that have been so gracious to my family during this time. You've been absolutely incredible. The outpouring has truly blessed us. It's caused us to weep at times, and we're eternally grateful. My wife has also been incredible, and I just want to personally thank her. She's providing water and Kleenexes for us this morning, gum, Tic Tacs, everything imaginable. I couldn't, though, put up with her Kleenexes. I needed Bounty Double Ply, just in case I break down. So I'm well prepared, I hope. Have that in there just in case. What can a man say about his father? I had the rare privilege of sharing the times and seasons of a man who left me with utterly no regrets, and at the end, no words left unsaid. My father was an incredible man. He lived a powerful life. And most of his character is due to his parents. These wonderful people that just poured themselves into him, and the love of his brothers and sisters, and his brothers-in-laws and his sister-in-laws. He loved you so very much. You are in his heart. My Uncle Clyde wrote me a wonderful email concerning my father, and here's a brief excerpt. He was returning from one of his frequent trips. "We are in the mountains of West Virginia, and will be coming home this morning. I told Linda that I've often thought he was like the brother I never had. Although we drifted in and out, never through disagreement, but rather through the trivial constraints of time, I enjoyed him. Like me, had he had money, he would have been eccentric." I like that one in particular. He goes on. I remember his sandstone carvings, his riding a unicycle, hearing of his tightrope walking, his arrowhead collecting, his ginsenging, his building of his house out of barn trusses, his reading shack, etc. You'll hear a lot about the reading shack, I'm sure, today if you talk to us. He had just enough uniqueness to be an extremely interesting fellow. He was always his own individual until he became God's. And to Uncle Clyde's list, I could add that he was a knife maker. We found in the garage, Rob had given him some antlers, and Dad was sanding down the antlers and had prepared them for a knife blade. It was likely going to be a gift to Rob coming up this Christmas. We could add, he gave me a sword. Dangerous thing. Sharp as anything you could imagine. I have it tied down in a box so my children won't get a hold of it. The kind of a scary thing. He was a rock collector. He has a rock tumbler, a reader. You heard about those crazy bikes he made, the recumbent bikes. Builder of curious structures. His greenhouse rivals his reading shack out there. You should see it. It's made of sliding doors and all kinds of other things. He was a gardener and a grandfather. If you look through some of the slideshow that we've created, you'll see him always with a child in his arms. He so loved our kids, even nailing a peach tree. That was wonderful. Thank you. Dad was a prolific writer. He penned probably hundreds of poems, some rather amusing plays. One of his plays, Before He Found Christ, it's a science fiction play, and apparently it was actually staged at some point, but it ends with, "This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius." If you know my dad, that's just bizarre. The new age tenets there. Oh, my. He wrote several serious books of fiction. Among them, 210 Lizzies, which you can get on Amazon.com. Right now it's currently under the name of Dwight. He would enjoy that. He wrote In Search of a Eulogy and The Fish Medallion. And he was working on a book, Love is Kind, which I don't think he completed. There's one more. I can't recall what it is. Yes, Giggle Soft Takes Field Trips, which was apparently juvenile fiction, which I never had the pleasure of reading. I set up a blog for him back in December of 2005, and he was writing in that often. He's filled it up, and his favorite topic on that was creationism. It's absolutely brimming with his thoughts and the issues that concerned him. And all of these things, they were eccentric, they were wonderful, and they were characteristics of my father, but they were never his sole identity. His sole identity was that he belonged to Jesus Christ. And he told us in particular of a night after he found Jesus, he was led to faith through a man named Carl Whitaker, to whom I'm grateful that he was a faithful servant in sharing his faith. But he said as he walked out that night, and out under a crisp night sky, it was cold and clear, he says it was the most beautiful night he had ever had in all of his existence. Because for the very first time, my dad was truly alive in Jesus Christ. It was a great night. And he remembered it so clearly, and he would tell us about it in moments. And it was so awesome to hear the joy that he had in that. His life message was that Christ was central. And God didn't just create the body. God created the mind. Dad believed that God's word in the Bible cohered with God's world. He believed that a Christian did not throw away their minds when they accepted Christ. And I spent, and my sister Mindy and the girls spent many hours with him into the dark watches of the night. And we would hear him talk about the Christian mind and hear him talk about the eternity and creation and how wonderful God was of wrapping all that all together. We spent that time plumbing his soul, and he's going to live with us forever just from that regard, hearing him speak to us. He was alive, body and soul. His reading, writings, creationisms, and other pursuits were built on glorifying God with all of himself. I mentioned that Dad is a creationist, and I need to talk about that because it was one of his central passions. He was a member of the Westside Creationism Club. Probably never heard of it. It's a dinky little thing. But he loved the topic. He absolutely loved it. He found that creationism was entirely consistent with his belief in Christ and the belief that God created his mind. When he was in school, he was heavily impacted by evolutionary thought and actually was somewhat atheistic for a while during his college years. But over time, the power of Christ and the power of ideas drew him to the idea that God had created an organized world, a world of order and discipline. And Dad wrote about that in his blog. He writes about Draco Rex Hogswartzia, which was a recent skeletal find. It's a horned dinosaur that they found, and they named it after the Harry Potter books. He goes on and on and on. If you ever want to see his blog, I'd be more than happy to share the URL with you. It's a wonderful place to visit. Over the years, Dad and I spent countless hours discussing God's created world. And some of the factors that influenced Dad were the growing pieces of evidence that are killing Darwin's theory. Karl Popper, a scientist who wrote on the philosophy of science, stated that in order to be defined as a science, a hypothesis or theory must be open to being proven wrong. It's called the falsifiability criterion, and Dad talked about this quite a bit. Evolution is something that may never be proved wrong. It's untestable by the scientific method since it occurred in the past. It's unrepeatable. The transitional forms are missing, which you'll see all over Dad's blog. The testimony of the fossils is that there was more biological diversity in the past than there is here today. And life is not getting more complex. It is running down. The complexity of life itself stupefies the Darwinian theory that things occur by increments. And Dad was one for pointing that out. One of the stories Dad loved, and which I share when I go out and do a street evangelism, is that about James Watson and Francis Crick. James Watson and Francis Crick discovered DNA, the deoxyribonucleic acid. It's the building block of life, a discovery which earned them the Nobel Prize. And the human body has over trillions of these DNA helixes. Crick, Dad was always fascinated by this, was an evolutionist and an atheist, where Dad came from. He decided that he was going to find out the probability that DNA arose spontaneously. He gave it all the time in the world. At that time, they believed the world was around 4.6 billion years. And after all of his calculations, after everything he did, he discovered that the chances of life coming into existence was zero. Zero. And I'd ask you, what was fascinated Dad the most? His dad, from this, ran into the arms of God. Did Crick leap into the arms of God? Never. He came up with something even more incredible. He came up with the theory of something called genetic panspermia, the idea that aliens seeded life on Earth. How could brilliant men come up with such garbage? One of the most brilliant men of all time. And the fact of the matter is, his heart was like yours and mine. He had to come up with something that fit himself. His mind has been darkened by the kings of this age, and he ended up worse than he began. If you see the problem, if you have a race of aliens that seed life on Earth, then where do the aliens come from? You have an infinite regression of aliens. And Dad loved that story. He thought it was hilarious. Two of the world's greatest minds decided to calculate the probability of a single cell coming into existence anywhere in the universe, much less for surviving for a few seconds. The very things that bring a cell into existence are the things that destroy it, if we look out there. Sir Frederick Hoyle of Cambridge and Chandra Rikramasinghe gave it 15 billion years, and the odds against it happening is 10 to the 40,000th power. You might ask, that's just a big number. What is it? Well, there's greater chance of a tornado going through a junkyard and assembling a 747 than 1 times 10 to the 40th power of ever occurring. Okay? Dad loved that kind of stuff. Dad wanted to tell people about that. He was kind of an evangelist for creationism. That's the reason why he's in the club. It's the reason why the charity, if you give money to that charity, it's the Creation Museum down in Hebron, Kentucky. Dad loved this stuff because the mind, you can use it to find that there should be a God. There should be a God. Dad decided to believe in a world created by God rather than a world created through cosmic accidents. Indeed, if we're all cosmic accidents sitting here this morning, then this funeral is the greatest of charades, thinking that Dad's death has any meaning whatsoever. Dad also strongly believed in the Bible. We have dozens of copies of Bibles, and they're marked up to high heaven. He's got them highlighted, he's got them underlined, he's got comments written into the margins. It's fantastic. I own one of them he gave me years ago, and he moved on to another. Mine's ragged. Imagine that you had the ability to predict the future, and you could tell an expectant mother 8 things about her baby. You could tell her its sex, the date of birth, the name, the weight at birth, the college, the occupation, the manner of death, and the age of death. The chance of all 8 of those things coming true is 1 times 10 to the 17th power. Well, if you've heard the story, forgive me, because I tell it occasionally. Dad liked this one too. 1 times 10 to the 17th power, if we try to grasp what does that mean, it's like covering Texas 2 feet deep with silver dollars. 2 feet deep. Take one of the silver dollars out, mark it with an X, toss it back into the pile. Get a blind man. Send the blind man out into the middle of the pile to find the one silver dollar marked with an X. The odds of him picking it up the first time is 1 times 10 to the 17th power. Yeah, quite a story. Incredible odds. Just 8 predictive prophecies about somebody's baby coming true. But you know what? With Jesus Christ, we have so many more than that. That's what the Bible's all about. Predictive prophecy. Over 333 prophecies directly related to who Jesus Christ was going to be. And Dad just embraced that Jesus. And he was excited when he would find something that talked about who Jesus was. Back in the Old Testament, back at least 400 years before Jesus stepped onto the scene, we see things so accurately that describe my dad's Lord. That's incredible. The book is also, Dad also admired the Bible because of its literary integrity. It firmed his confidence in it. When we look at the other writings of classic literature, such as Plato, written in 447 BC, the earliest copy we have is 900 AD, basically 1,200 years later. And we don't have thousands of copies to prove it by, we just have a few. And those few disagree with each other. So it's kind of crazy. The Gallic Wars, written in 44 BC, a copy in 900 AD. It was written 1,000 years after it was the only copy we have is 1,000 years after it was originally written. And I could go on with Tacitus, Aristotle, the Iliad, and everything else. For the New Testament, written, probably the last writing, somewhere around 90 AD, our copies actually go back into into a witness period of around 125 AD. 30 years after the events took place. No one would ever say that Plato or the Gallic Wars were inaccurate and bad history. However, the Bible is attacked incessantly, and Dad felt those attacks. Dad blogged about the attacks. The Bible is the best testified to document in the world, and if we cannot accept it as accurate, we cannot accept much of what is commonly considered to be the history of mankind, because history has less historical attestation than the Bible. If we only had the guys that followed after the apostles, known as the church fathers, from their quotes alone, we could piece together 95% of the Bible. This is the kind of stuff that would make Dad sit up here and go on and on and on, which I'm going to do, because I'm preaching the message. You may not have known that. I'm replacing Jerry this morning. The message of hope.